Good morning, Texas Tech. I'm Josh Cook, and today we'll be talking all about the State of the Union, which the President of the United States delivered last week, and what it means to you.
And I'm Julie Fisher. That's right, we'll be hearing professional and public opinions on President Obama's speech, as well as how it holds up to speeches past.
I'm Marissa Trevino, and a special social media shout-out to Skylar Fox, Jacob Koppel, and Stevie Douglas. Fun fact, when someone replies to you on Facebook or Twitter, it's probably me, so you should be nice. Not that you guys aren't, because you always are. And KTXT News is next.
Good morning, Texas Tech. I'm Julie Fisher with your KTXT News update. Governor Rick Perry has reappointed a Texas Tech graduate to the Texas Workforce Commission. Andreas Alcantar of Pflugerville was reappointed for a term which expires February 1, 2019. He's the former deputy director of the Governor's Office Division of Budget, Planning, and Policy and the current chair of the Texas Workforce Commission. Alcantar received his bachelor's and master's degree in public administration from Texas Tech University. If your family is in need of vaccinations, head to various locations across Lubbock this week to get up to date. Clinics will be held today at the Groves Library at 5520 19th Street from 1 to 3 p.m. and Wednesday at the Godeke Library at 6707 Slide Road from 1 to 3 p.m. as well. The final immunization session will be held Friday at the Health Department at 806 18th Street from 8:30 a.m. until noon. Vaccinations are for those 2 months and older. Children's vaccines cost $10 for one dose and $15 for two or more. Prices for adult immunizations vary. For more information, call the Health Department Immunization Clinic at 775-3090. And a Lubbock Community Partnership was recently awarded a U.S. Department of Education Promise Neighborhood Grant that will provide East Lubbock schools with a $24.5 million grant over the next 5 years. The collaboration is comprised of Lubbock Independent School District, Texas Tech University, the Health Sciences Center, and numerous partnering businesses and organizations. The goal of this initiative is to promote student success and overall stability, as well as health and safety education and social support efforts throughout the community. Now here's Cutter Martin with KTXT Weather.
Good morning, Lubbock. Starting out the day on a cooler note after a cold front moved through the South Plains on Sunday evening. Temperatures this morning are in the upper 30s, but winds are making it feel cooler than that, more like the lower 30s and upper 20s out there. Definitely grab a jacket as you head out the door because the cool trend will continue this afternoon with highs only in the upper 50s, maybe pushing 60. Skies, however, will remain mostly clear, making it a pretty nice day out there, though breezy conditions will last through the afternoon. You'll certainly feel the cool air blowing around out there. I'm Cutter Martin with your KTXT weather. Now back to Good Morning Texas Tech.
Welcome back into Good Morning Texas Tech on KTXT, the Raider 88.1 FM Lubbock. Kind of interesting opening to American Woman there. I don't know. Well, yeah, it's good. We got an American theme today. If you didn't hear our opening, it's the State of the Union address was last week, so it's all patriotic this week for Monday's show. Good way to start a Monday.
Maybe not patriotic, but songs about America for sure.
Okay, well, that's, yeah, we'll go there.
Let's get your American pride on this morning. You don't like this song, Josh?
No, anytime I hear this song, I have flashbacks to seeing Austin Powers. So,
oh, goodness,
I'm just
gracious.
Saying, that's...
I need to watch more movies.
Matt enjoys that. Because you understand. That's... Okay.
We're here with our new music director, who was just hired on. Matt, go ahead and say hi to the masses.
What's going on, guys? This is Matt. How's it going?
He is pretty fly. I have to say I'm very proud of this person. He's already got some new music in the system for y'all, so y'all be listening. You'll hear a lot of changes in our lineup, but they are good, good changes. Hopefully less Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks a lot. Happy to be here.
All right, so getting back to the State of the Union, some of you may be asking, what is the State of the Union? Others may be asking, why are you talking about it? Because I don't care. We're going to make you care today. Because I think it's a very important part of our rights as citizens.
And if you don't care, you'll be sitting alongside me. And I have fun facts for kids pulled up, so Get ready for those.
Okay, so we've had a couple of our practicum students put together a little bit of a history update for listeners.
Last week, many people gathered in front of their televisions to watch President Obama's State of the Union address, but few wondered why the president gives a State of the Union address every year. The truth is, the address is rooted in Article 2, Section 3, Clause 1 of the Constitution, which says, "He, the president, shall from time to time give to Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient." It was only when George Washington gave the first State of the Union address in January 1790 that the address became an annual event. The first State of the Union address was short by today's standards, comprising just 833 words compared to those of today, which average 5,000. In his speech, Washington praised the first Congress's work and outlined a brief legislative plan for the upcoming year. When Thomas Jefferson took office in 1801, he decided that the idea of showing up before Congress to deliver a grand address sounded too much like a monarch, so he wrote a letter instead. Over a century, every president opted to keep Congress informed through a written message rather than a spoken one. Then, in 1913, Woodrow Wilson delivered a speech to Congress. Since the 1913 revival of the practice, 22 State of the Union reports have come in written form, most recently Reagan's 1989 report. President Truman actually gave the first televised State of the Union in 1947, but it didn't become a primetime spectacle until 1965. At the time, LBJ was trying to sell Americans on his civil rights reforms and Great Society plans. So he decided to give the address at night in order to reach the widest possible audience. The trick worked, and it was the first State of the Union address to be televised during the evening. In 1966, television networks offered the Republican Party a half-hour slot for a rebuttal of LBJ's address. Since 1976, the opposition's response has been slotted indirectly behind the State of the Union. Ronald Reagan's State of the Union address in 1982 added a Hollywood touch to the address. His address was the first to feature personal guests that the president publicly recognized over the course of his speech. According to the Office of the Clerk of the U.S. House of Representatives, Harry Truman takes the prize for the longest address with a 1946 speech of over 25,000 words. For Good Morning Texas Tech, this is Kaylin Stevens.
All right, so that was a nice little summary of kind of where the history, where the State of the Union has come from and how it's kind of developed over the past however many years, the many years that it's been around. We have some awesome facts here about the state of the Union.
Well, what I think is interesting is that the first one was the shortest one with 1,000 words, and I can pull out 1,000 words about America, and that was George Washington.
But that's George Washington, and at that point, he didn't have a lot to say about America except, "Go, America." It wasn't like
us,
we've
please.
Spent the last 50 years doing a pretty bad job.
We've gotten ourselves into a lot of debt.
He didn't have a lot to make up for, I guess, is what we're talking about. I mean, he'd just been the hero of the day and kind of showed up. And I think his was probably the best and the simplest because he didn't even really want to be president. He was just kind of there, and they loved him.
He was a war hero, wasn't he?
Yeah, he didn't have to win anybody over. And I feel like that's really what the State of the Union has turned into, is not so much Congress, this is what we need. It's turned into, look at me, and these are the things I'm concerned about. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I think the most interesting thing, since we are on radio, is that Calvin Coolidge was the first president to give his State of the Union message over the radio airwaves, and I think that's when it started becoming a real national event, and it started spreading across the country because people could tune in on their radios and listen to the presidential speech that he's given to Congress. And it's interesting enough that when President Obama was giving his last week, I actually listened to it on the radio for part of it and then came into the lab across the hall here and watched the rest on YouTube. So it was interesting to see the difference of actually listening to it and how much you paid attention to the words and what he was saying instead of watching it and paying attention to how many people were clapping and what was coming up on the screen and what stats were being thrown up.
I think that's a really...
It's a valid point.
Yeah,
I think you look at people and you judge like what they're doing and their body language, and you kind of lose what they're actually saying.
Well, it was... Was it when... Who was Nixon running against?
It was JFK.
Kennedy, right? the radio audience said that he sounded awesome, but mm-hmm. the TV audience wouldn't pick him because of the way that he looked. And I think that's one of the reasons why radio is my chosen medium, because nobody has to look at me.
But whatever, Julie.
I think that you can hear a message a lot better, and you have to be a lot more clear whenever people can only hear your voice.
Well, and Franklin Roosevelt gave 12 State of the Union addresses, and mm-hmm. all of them, I think, were over radio, his fireside chats.
Yeah.
So.
And those were some, in my opinion, some of the best that I've heard.
It's the best way to address the Union all the time, keep them always in the know.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and hop into a break, get a report on some free food across campus. Hit us up on the Raider 88.1. We'll be back.
Grubbs here with your Grub Report. On February 19th and the 20th, make your way down to the Sub Mesa Room for some free food, courtesy of the Advisor EDU Lunch Series meetings and the Student Organization Advisors. These meetings are provided to train and help staff to recognize and assist students in need. Please RSVP to studentorgs@ttu.edu. The meetings begin at 12 and end at 1. And on February 25th at 7:30 p.m. in the Alpha Chi Omega Lodge, there will be a Raider-thon event with free pizza and many other potential prizes, such as a voucher for a free Fuzzy's meal for the first 10 people to register with their sorority, fraternity, or student organization. Raider-thon is a student organization that raises money year-round for Children's Miracle Network at University Medical Center. For more information, go to raiderthon.org or contact Alyssa Edstrom at alyssa.edstrom@ttu.edu. I'm Chris Grubbs, and this has been your Grub Report.
Rose wouldn't have had to let go if she'd only listened to KTXT's winter weather alerts with up-to-date emergency weather conditions on the air, Twitter, and Facebook. KTXT Weather will never let you go.
First annual Texas Tech Abathon is coming up February 22nd and 23rd, hosted by the College of Media and Communication and the Whitaker College of Engineering. The first annual Texas Tech Abathon will challenge students to create the perfect app for the popular on-campus game, Humans vs. Zombies. Visit ttuabathon.com to register now.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee, and I'll sit here and wait while a few keep...
Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech on a beautiful Monday morning. You can hit us up on Twitter at TheRaider881, on Facebook.com/TheRaider881, or on Twitter, #TheRaider. We are now joined in studio by Dr. Dennis Patterson, Associate Professor of Political Science and Concentration Director for the University's Interdisciplinary Graduate Program in International Studies. Good morning, Dr. Patterson. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
We are speaking about the State of the Union today, and before we dive into that topic with you, we had a package put together as kind of a speech montage of previous State of the Union speeches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
President Washington began this tradition in 1790 after reminding the nation that the destiny of self-government and the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty is finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people.
I want to speak to you tonight about where we are and where we must go, about what we have done and what we must do. And I want to pledge to you my best efforts and ask you to pledge yours.
And to set forth our responsibilities, in the words of our founders, to form a more perfect union. The State of the Union is strong.
And I must say to you, that the State of the Union is not good. Millions of Americans are out of work. Recession and inflation are eroding the money of millions more. The American people want action, and it will take both the Congress and the President to give them what they want. we labored to establish a unity of purpose and interest among the many groups which make up the American community.
Through hot wars and cold, through recession and prosperity, through the ages of the atom and outer space, the American people have neither faltered nor has their faith flagged. If at times our actions seem to make life difficult for others, it is only because history has made life difficult for us all.
What we do or fail to do at home affects not only ourselves, but millions throughout the world. We must make sure that the United States is sound economically, socially, and politically.
As we gather tonight, our nation is at war, our economy is in recession, and the civilized world faces unprecedented dangers. Yet the state of our union has never been stronger.
We are Americans, part of something larger than ourselves.
We have cleared away the rubble of crisis.
But we have achieved a unity of interest among our people that is unmatched in the history of freedom.
And we can say with renewed confidence that the state of our union is stronger.
A very well put together speech montage of the past states of the unions. There we're joined by Dr. Dennis Patterson. You listen to that montage, it's kind of an interesting trip through history. You go through the highs and the lows of America, you go through the space race and wars. Your thoughts on some of the past states of the unions and what people should take away from them after listening to that montage?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are consistent throughout at least recent history, in the post-war history, especially since media is playing such a more and more important role. What you notice is that there's a litany or a discussion of the major challenges and problems that the current administration that just won an election is going to face. But at the same time, there's also a statement that, hey, we've got to pull together, and you always want to start a new presidency on a positive note, because 2 years down the road, you're going to get an adjustment. There's that midterm election. And what's going to happen from this day forward, from the day of that speech forward, is the challenges of a new administration and the problems that have to get solved. So you start on a positive note, but it's a discussion of the things that are ahead. It's actually the way a president sets the policy agenda for the next 2 years.
You're exactly right. Listening to Barack Obama's speech the other night, we'll get to that in the next segment. We actually have snippets from that in the next segment of the show. But when a president is writing his State of the Union or is being helped getting it written, is there an emphasis put on the words that he says, how he says them? Because to me, it seems like a very deliberate, delivered speech and something he's been working on for a while to get that message across in his hour that he has.
Sure. I mean, the words are very, very important. All presidents have speech writers, or at least they did, in the modern era. Delivery is very, very, very important because this is televised. It's a dramatic event. It's where the agenda is set, and the president has to set the tone. So the choice of words, body language, all that stuff is very, very important because people are watching this. Sure, absolutely.
It's become a very theatrical event now. As in previous years, we've seen the amount of applause get extended because they made a point this past week. The president's speech timed out is only 37 minutes. When watching it last night, it took an hour and 15 minutes to get through the entire actual speech from the time he walked into the chamber and the time he walked off the podium. What are your thoughts on this becoming more of just a theatrical event, so much applause, and it kind of takes away from the speech itself?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, as an event, it is a dramatic event, and an event itself, it's a political event. And as a result, you know, the Congress is also part of this and all the other actors. And remember, cameras don't just focus on the president. They're looking at who's clapping, who's smirking, who's saying yes, who's saying no, because it's about everybody. And it's about the Congress. Remember, we've got a Congress that is not very highly evaluated these days. So, yeah, I mean, the cameras are panning everywhere. And therefore, what you find is it's not just the content, but it's the reaction and everything else.
Now, George W. Bush and Clinton didn't get an initial State of the Union address in their first terms. How does that differ? Because they just gave an inaugural speech.
Right. Well, that's an interesting question. And, you know, there's a couple of different things I think we need to keep in mind, and that is there's always the traditions from the past. I mean, there is a requirement, and as long as you report to Congress, you fulfill your constitutional requirement. However, you notice that George W. Bush did have a State of the Union his second term, and he talked about expending political capital that he had earned. He may have wanted to have said, I'm going to invest it, which is a whole different way to say it. But the point is that different presidents choose to start different ways. And Clinton, both started the same way, but you know both midterm did say so. You carry on the tradition, and, you know, that's an individual decision, and I can't tell you why they did individually, but...
All right, well, we're here with Associate Professor of Political Science, Dennis Patterson. We're going to hop into a break real fast, get you some updates on some stuff going around tech, and we'll be right back.
With your KTXT Sports Update, I'm Joshua Cook. It was an afternoon to remember on Sunday as the 1993 Lady Raider National Championship team was honored inside the USA during halftime of the Texas Tech game against Texas. It marked the first time since 93 that the entire team had reunited. Current Lady Raiders put on a show for the former players, beating Texas 69-62. China Brown leading all scorers with 16 points, putting her over the 1,000 career point mark. Second Lady Raider to accomplish that feat this season. And at the end, head coach Christy Curry just taking it all in.
I want to thank the crowd. What an amazing atmosphere today. And I want to thank the 93 team for being here and for taking time for us yesterday and the opportunity that our players had a chance to visit with and, you know, realize even more what they represent as something bigger than themselves was really special. And Coach Sharp, and we're just all very, very honored to have the opportunity to walk in their footsteps every day. And I'm really proud of our team for finishing off the weekend in the right way with a win.
Lady Raiders are back on the hardwood on Saturday in Lawrence against the Jayhawks with first tip set for noon. On the diamond, Red Raider baseball opened the season a perfect 4-0, beating BYU, Northern Colorado, and Northern Illinois twice. Tech outscored its opponents 36-2. The two runs are the fewest ever allowed in program history in the opening four games of any season. Red Raider head coach Tim Tadlock reflects on the weekend and the perfect start.
Overall impression, hadn't really had time to think about it. Really pleased with coming out today. I mean, yesterday the doubleheader was really tough, as we mentioned, and then quick turnaround today. Guys did a good job, and we need to keep moving forward.
This has been your KTXT Sports Update. I'm Joshua Cook.
You know the names of the U.S. residents who then became the presidents and got a view from the White House loo of Pennsylvania Avenue. George Washington was the first, you see. He walked up to a cherry tree.
Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech, joined by Dr. Dennis Patterson. You can join us on Twitter at TheRaider881 or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheRaider881. We were speaking about the State of the Union speech this past week, and it was one of those speeches by President Barack Obama getting into his second term, the, I guess you could almost say the make it or break it term, it seems, for presidents in past years, because it's usually they've had a good first term, second term not so well, or it's vice versa. They've had kind of a rough first term, a good second term. In your thoughts from President Obama's speech on Tuesday night, what were your initial reactions to it, what he said? Was there anything that stuck out to you?
Well, he named several things that are going to be the focus of this administration. If you go back to his first speech, healthcare played an important role. And sure enough, you know, since Teddy Roosevelt first tried to introduce universal health care in America, that was the main issue in the first administration, and it got passed. This administration, there are going to be several things that he's focused on. There's no doubt about it. He made them very, very, very clear in that State of the Union speech.
We've got some clips from the State of the Union. Go ahead and play, DG, the education, immigration, and gun laws clips.
Every dollar we invest in high-quality early childhood education can save more than $7 later on by boosting graduation rates, reducing teen pregnancy, even reducing violent crime. In states that make it a priority to educate our youngest children, like Georgia or Oklahoma, studies show students grow up more likely to read and do math at grade level, graduate high school, hold a job, form more stable families of their own. We know this works. So let's do what works and make sure none of our children start the race of life already behind. Let's give our kids that chance. Real reform means stronger border security, and we can build on the progress my administration's already made, putting more boots on the southern border than at any time in our history, and reducing illegal crossings to their lowest levels in 40 years. Real reform means establishing a responsible pathway to earned citizenship, a path that includes passing a background check, paying taxes and a meaningful penalty, learning English, and going to the back of the line behind the folks trying to come here legally. And real reform means fixing the legal immigration system to cut waiting periods and attract the highly skilled entrepreneurs and engineers that will help create jobs and grow our economy. IDEA's parents, Nate and Cleo, are in this chamber tonight, along with more than 24 Americans whose lives have been torn apart by gun violence. They deserve a vote. They deserve a vote. Gabby Giffords deserves a vote. The families of Newtown deserve a vote. The families of Aurora deserve a vote. The families of Oak Creek and Tucson and Blacksburg and the countless other communities ripped open by gun violence, they deserve a simple vote.
All righty. Those were some clips from Obama's speech. I have to say, I was kind of surprised by what he said about immigration, because that goes along with kind of what people against him want, it sounds like to me.
Well, understand that it was George W. Bush who really initiated, I mean, the first major immigration reform came from Reagan, mm-hmm. okay, Republican president. George W. Bush introduced a very similar kind of program, but only to be opposed by some very conservative members of his own party. Mm-hmm. Now, this past election, and I'm not trying to be cynical, not to say this, but in election, one group that was very supportive of the president was Hispanic Americans. Mm-hmm. They're going to expect this. And remember this, presidents always speak to the audiences and the issues that got them elected. Mm-hmm. This is what Absolutely. All elected officials do. So mm-hmm. you're going to work on immigration. Absolutely, yes, because that is a group that his on-the-ground campaign team helped mobilize. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important.
Yes, it is. That is, I'm living in Texas and growing up in Texas, it's mm-hmm. been really interesting to see how immigrants have been integrated into the voting process. And I worked in news for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And just in those 2 years of when Obama was claiming office mm-hmm. and everything, it was really interesting to see how campaign organizers were motivated to go after these immigrants and the mm-hmm. Hispanic Americans mm-hmm. because they were kind of just being left alone. There wasn't really as much targeted towards them.
No, and this is a group that demographically is going to play very, very and increasingly important roles in the upcoming elections.
I agree.
And going on education, I thought it was odd how he mentioned teen pregnancies and education, but I work with teens and I see that they're still in high school and they're just pregnant, and I don't see how that really correlates. What do you think on that?
Well, what he's talking about is early education. That is to say, Head Start programs. When you have kids that have preschool education prior to going to kindergarten and K-12, you find that there's a lot lower incidence of teenage pregnancies and stuff like that. So you have to correlate with the early education program, not the fact that those problems still exist in high school.
And I think it's very easy for people our age who have just gone through the usually public education system and are mm-hmm. coming right out into college, right into the real world, to look at the situation as far as education goes and say, this is messed up. Mm-hmm. I know my last 5 years of public school felt completely pointless.
Sure. Well, listen, I mean, the United States, our K-12 system, the best thing you can say about it is that it's very different depending on which district you're talking about. Good districts, bad districts. But our higher education is unsurpassed in the world, and there are good reasons for that. And what we're trying to do is make K-12 a lot better and higher quality, like our higher education. I mean, I've gone to universities all over the world. United States is unsurpassed.
When looking at his speech, talking about young education, the biggest topic, of course, was the Newtown, Connecticut shooting, mm-hmm. the children that were lost in that tragedy there. what were your thoughts on his speech there where he calls for a vote for everyone, Aurora, Colorado, Gabby Gifford, all those folks? It was one of those speeches that a lot of people were looking at as that was the moment people were going to remember from the State of the Union.
Yeah, no, it was, first of all, as a speech, it was very, very effective. Choice of words and everything. But you understand that politics always responds to events. People look and say, hey, this is an opportunity now for us to do things. We had a ban on assault weapons under Clinton following a similar kind of tragedy in California. So the point is, this is a time when the political process can respond. And what he's doing is he's setting the agenda for this, saying, you got to vote. Because usually these things don't get introduced because no one wants to be seen as either saying, I stand with the NRA or I stand against the NRA. So this is one where the lines have been drawn. And it's going to hurt people if they don't, because no one believes in shooting kids. But on the other hand, everyone believes in the Second Amendment. And that's a really tough one to balance. So what he did is he drew the lines very, very carefully, but in a way that could advantage the Democratic side or the pro-gun regulation side.
I agree with that. I think that does it for us today. We're here with Associate Professor of Political Science, Dennis Patterson. We really want to thank you for coming in today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It was great.
I hope to visit again.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
No, this is my hand right now. Set up a motor. We need more seats. We just sold out all the floor seats. Take me on a trip. I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York. I'd love to see LA.
This 5'7" guy who's just my type. Like the way he's speaking, his confidence is peaking. Don't like his baggy jeans, but I'ma like what's underneath it. And no, I ain't been to MIA. I heard the Cali never rains, the New York's wide awake. First, let's see the West End. I'll show you to my bedroom. I'm liking this American boy, American boy.
Good morning, Texas Tech. Here's a look at your events calendar. Texas Tech School of Art presents artist and educator Hollis Hammonds at Texas Tech University February 18th. Hammonds will give an artist talk at 6:30 in the Art Building, Room B01. The lecture will be followed by a reception at the Folio Gallery located in the Texas Tech School of Art Building, where Hammonds' artwork will be on display from February 11th through February 24th. Tech will host another artist and lecturer, Dana Soliner, who will present an artist talk on February 28th at 6:30 in Room B01 of the Art Building. The lecture will cover his work and philosophy of painting. Following the presentation, there will be a reception in the Folio Gallery as well, where Soliner will present the exhibition, Findings Dana Soliner Studies. The work will be on display from February 26th through March 10th, 2013.
Good morning, Lubbock. Gone are the warmer temperatures of this weekend, and now cooler temperatures are around and will be around for a couple more days following a cold front which moved through on Sunday evening. Temperatures are now in the 30s and will only warm into the upper 50s to around 60, which is near normal for this time of year, but definitely not like the 70s we experienced this weekend. Skies, however, will be sunny through the afternoon with winds a little bit gusty, maybe 20-25 miles per hour. Not too much of a blowing dust issue, but will make it feel cooler through the afternoon. I'm Cutter Martin with your KTXC weather. Now back to Good Morning Texas Tech.
Dear Mr. President, were you a lonely boy? Were you a lonely boy?
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech. I'm Julie Fisher. We're here with Josh Cook and Marissa Trevino.
Who is this person singing right now?
This is Pink.
Is it?
I completely forgot about this song. I think she wrote it for Bush. And it's basically...
Josh is holding waving up a pretend lighter. Well, really, it's a cell phone.
I need to get an app.
There's That's what people do app. Now instead of lighters.
There's a lighter app phones. That you can, I guess.
Hold during concerts?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It sounds dangerous.
We've heard from a professional. We've heard a lot of audio from the president and past presidents and information about what past presidents did. So we kind of wanted to get a student take on everything. We went around and asked students if they had one question that they could ask the president, what would they ask? And these are some of the responses that we got.
If you could tell the president one thing, what would you say?
That's a really good question. I guess I would ask him about one of his policies, maybe Because I know he always says like what his policies are, but I would want to know more in depth, maybe something about gun control or like his healthcare bill, something that that he doesn't announce to the public.
If you could ask President Obama one question, what would you ask him?
I have no idea, honestly.
All right.
I have no idea.
Okay. If you could ask the president one question, what would you ask?
President of the United States?
Yeah.
I would probably ask him how much longer we're going to be in Afghanistan, to be honest. I got family members over there. He said in the State of the Union we're going to be pulling out by 2014, but he said the majority of our forces, I want to know when the entirety of the United States military is out of Afghanistan. I want an exact year, not just 2014, the majority will be out. That's the one thing I would ask.
I don't know. I don't really understand a lot of the stuff that's going on, but I don't know. I think I'm one of those people who shouldn't have an opinion. Like, I hate whenever I listen to people talk and they're like, oh, well, I don't like Obama, or I like Obama, and you're like, oh, well, what's your parents' point of view? And they're like saying exactly what their parents have said. Yeah. I mean, I would say the economy sucks pretty bad, yeah. But actually in poli sci, like, I've learned that it didn't start with Obama. You know what I mean? It started long, long before our last president or the one before that. You know what I mean? So our economy does suck really bad. But, I mean, I can't blame it all on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I can't say that it's not his fault either, because I don't know. You know what I mean? I need to pay attention better.
I guess, how does he tolerate conservative viewpoints that are extremely conservative, I guess? And how does he incorporate that with his decisions? That'd be the question I'd ask him.
Just how can he just help with all the economical issues that's been going on, especially for the students? We have lots of debts and stuff. What he can do about it with loans or scholarships, anything that can help us out.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just hope he does a good job.
All right.
So we'll see how it turns out, because at least he's had experience, you know, in its past 4 years, so.
Okay, there's a few interesting little factoids I want y'all to know about the making of that Man on the Street package. I went to one of our interns and asked him, hey, can you go out with this recorder and just ask people what they would ask the president? He got such a wide array of horrible answers. They were so far out of left field.
What is your definition of horrible answers?
There was this one girl who was talking to him. Okay, Carmen Askernice was the one who did the interview, and he's African-American. I didn't even think about it when I sent him out, but there were some people who halfway through the interview would ask him to turn off the microphone and ran away from him because they got so nervous. Because I don't know if it's just because they didn't feel like what they were saying was politically correct or what, but it really kind of brought to my attention some people's attitudes on our president and just the way that he's received by all kinds of different people.
We have to also remember that we're in West Texas. We're at a very, I would say, majority Republican school, and he's not Republican.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a lot of sways which and right. So
yeah, but he got some funny answers too. They didn't translate well over into radio. But there was one guy who he asked him the question, and he went, "Oh, that's deep, man. Can you give me a second?" he asked Carmen to turn around and look the other way while he thought of a question. So it was just, I love interviewing
people. Talking in a mic is scary sometimes.
I think what that piece proved to us is it's an interesting thought, because President Barack Obama has really pushed the young vote. He's pushed the 18 to 25-year-old vote, because it's just a fact that our age group is not voting. Our age group doesn't vote. They don't vote in the elections, and he's really pushed for that vote. And it's interesting to see that people in our age group really don't understand what's going on, or kind of maybe don't care who the president is.
I would say that I'm probably in that group that doesn't vote, doesn't care. And it sounds bad, but I don't get a vote for the president, and I don't keep up with local politics. I don't have enough mm-hmm. time for that.
Oh, I mean, for me personally, I haven't voted in a presidential election, and it's been mainly just because it's kind of like, well, do I choose the lesser of two evils, or, well, you know, there's really no one that I really like, or because they flip-flop so much through an election, I can't really go for who's telling the truth anymore. And also the fact is, the president can stand there in his campaign and promise all these things, but when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, there's a constitution, there's a, you know, balanced system where it's got to go through Congress, it's got to go through the House of Representatives and everything along lines like that. And it's not just the president sitting there and signing the bill and saying it's into law now.
I think a lot of people don't vote, you know, when they're young, at least me, for example. You know, it's Texas, and my reasoning, and it's not necessarily logical or rational, but if I'm going to vote conservative in Texas, it's not going to make a difference. The state's going to go conservative anyways. If I'm a liberal and I want to vote liberal or Democratic in Texas, it's not going to make a difference. The state is always going to carry conservative.
And I think that Matt hit it on the head as far as what my reasoning is, was this last election, it didn't matter who I voted for, because my area was already decided. In states like Texas, where you are going to get such a strict split, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I go out. And for me, I didn't like any of the candidates. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought that they were all inappropriate for what we needed. But I agree with that completely.
Well, what I think is why I don't vote, really, like, the popular vote doesn't elect the president. It's the Electoral College. So my vote really doesn't matter as much as people say it does. It matters in smaller elections and who votes for those anyways.
But the popular vote actually is tied to the Electoral College. You know, I used to think the Electoral College was a group of old wise men in tweed jackets. It's actually essentially a summary of the popular vote based on how many votes your state has. But the problem with my reasoning, and I guess Julie's as well, is if we all thought like that, or all 18 to 22-year-olds thought like that, there would be no voting. And then the votes might count for more.
I agree with Julie on the fact that essentially in Texas it's going to go red every year. It's going to go red for every election. If we were in a swing state, which Texas is definitely not a swing state by any means, if we were in Ohio or Florida or one of those states where, you know, a matter of votes could swing it either way, it would make a difference for me.
Well, Texas hasn't always been Republican. We used to be Democratic. We did a while ago.
It's been a while.
I mean, things can still change, though.
They can, and I think that they will, but I think that this last election was not one of those times. I don't know. I like the fact that I have a right to vote. I just don't like the people that I have to vote for.
Tell us what you guys think. Hit us up on the Raider 88.1 for Twitter and Facebook. We would love to hear your thoughts.
All right. Well, that does it for the Man on the Street segment. We still have two more segments coming up. We're going to talk about coping with comedy and how we discuss things like the State of the Union easier when we can laugh about it. So we'll be back here in a couple of minutes.
I ain't causing nothing but problems, and now they're saying I'm in trouble with the government. I'm loving it, I shoveled shit all my life, and now I'm jumping in on white America. I could be one of your kids, white America. Look, Eric looks just like this, white America. Erica loves my
tea. We sat down with Michael Molina, Vice Chancellor of Facility Planning and Construction, to talk about the loss of a faculty parking lot and the new growth it brings to the College of Education. When will the Burkhart Autism Center be completed?
Well, our goal right now is September, October of this year, 2013.
Is there a reason it couldn't have been put inside the education building?
Yes, they do have an operation there, the autism research, but in reality, with needing five more classrooms for K through five, used for research-specific, branded cafe, the public outreach area, and preschool classrooms and laboratories. There's a transition academy in there for post-secondary education space, an outpatient center for therapy and observation rooms, and then, of course, a grant and research center, which is more flexible office and lab environment. Really, all of those building functions, when you program the process of calculating square footage needs versus what's available out there. It just didn't fit into the existing footprint where they are. And it, of course, our institutional advancement group did a good job partnering with the Burkhart family, and who has an interest in autism, and really felt like the project could be a much grander scale in terms of the program needs. And that's kind of what drove it to be its own entity or own building.
So where will the new parking lot for faculty and staff be located at?
Actually, we're building a new parking lot just to the southwest of the library, which is north of the psychology building.
Okay. I can never imagine a parking lot going there, but I guess I could picture that now.
It's really just one building away from where it is today. So the walk is, depending on where you house now, when the lot that used to be there, it's really not that far of a walk from anywhere where it was before.
Well, thank you, Mr. Molina, for answering some of our questions on our new and upcoming building. This is Bianca Yarbrough from KTXT.
When she was an American girl, raised up in provinces, she couldn't ever...
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech with your Made in American girls, Marissa Trevino and Julie Fisher, and Made in America boy, Josh Cook.
Okay, I'm glad you fixed that before you called me a Made in American girl.
But Josh has been called a Twittering girl before.
I have.
And that's okay. It's okay. Julie, did you know this was my favorite song when you put it on? It's
really
not my favorite, but it's one of them.
I did not know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you can turn it up, DG. I'll
and
dance.
She's bobbing her head.
I love Tom Petty.
He's good.
Aside, the reason I haven't had a haircut in a year is because the last haircut I got was a Tom Petty haircut. It was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. Anyway, we're here to talk about coping with comedy.
Coping with comedy.
That's what I
titled the segment as. The State of the Union address. We were talking about how it's not as appealing and doesn't reach people our age as much, right? Except if Stephen Colbert talks about it, right?
Or Jon Stewart.
He's just a
hilarious butthole.
Hilarious.
I don't know if you can say that.
I think I can.
So, DG, do you have that package located? It should be on the button bar. he's doing, okay, we need to stretch this topic until he finds it.
It was pretty fun to watch them talk about it, so.
This, okay, here it is.
Last night's State of the Union address, big whoop-a-doo-doo. I mean, what kind of insecure, narcissistic jerk expects America to tune in just to hear a room full of people mindlessly cheer him?
Well, tonight in Washington, the president, Barack Obama, he's the president now, he gave us, he gave his second State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress, which joint session sounds like more fun than it is. But there's been a lot of speculation as to which of our many problems the president would focus on: healthcare, unemployment, the wars, the Octomom, take your pick. But
you were saying something about bridges?
70,000 structurally deficient bridges across the country.
Shouldn't you have led the speech with that one? 70,000 structurally deficient? I mean, come on, shouldn't you just open with that, or broke into whatever programming was scheduled with an urgent message the night you found that out? Hey, everybody, this is President Barack Obama. The bridges are death traps!
It is pathetic.
He should get on this stuff. I mean, this is, oh, wait a minute. Me? For how long? But unfortunately, the president continued painting his picture of an America that sounded more like an Applebee's-laden dystopic hellscape.
It's a big waste of time, and it's a big waste of airtime that could be better spent on celebrities ice skating or conveyor belts of love, things like that. Though I have to admit, I did like the new State of the Union opening theme song.
That nails it on the head. I mean, they hit it right there.
And if all of y'all are wondering, Josh does giggle like a girl. And he's crying because he's laughing so hard. He can't even hop on mic to defend himself.
I put that piece together last night, and it was the funnest piece ever to put together. And we were sitting there debating whether to put the music of Hail to the Chief in the background, but it made it money. So
I agree.
It's beautiful.
Talking about coping with comedy and how much more interesting that was than the whole rest of what we've talked about, I think kind of proves our point that what, and Marissa pointed this out, they were saying everything that everyone was thinking.
But no one has the guts to say it.
Yes, and that's, I think, what makes this so appealing, especially to our generation, is who cares? Oh, thank you for interrupting and telling us about bridges.
Our generation is so bitter that everything that they always say is just funny to us because it's what we're already thinking.
Well, I think the main reason that guys like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are so successful is because you flip through the channels of Fox and CNN, you see it's not the same people, but it's just people just breaking down Obama's speech and breaking down what this meant and that meant. And you have, professionals and former governors and lieutenant governors breaking it down of what his words meant. And then Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert just kind of sit there and make fun of it. It's like, hey, this is a speech. This is all it is. It's one speech, and they just tear it apart, and it's fun to watch, and it's appealing to us because at 10 o'clock at night, instead of watching the local news or watching CNN, our age group is tuning into Jon Stewart, is tuning into Stephen Colbert because it's funny to us and it appeals to our generation, their style of delivering the news.
The comedic aspect also breaks it down in kind of layman terms. Mm-hmm. I know for me, the president might as well give his State of the Union in Russian. Some of the words he uses are very long, and I wish he would just be more to the point. Things are bad. We are in trouble. Things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, they kind of help us relate to the material.
Well, I think they do a great job of overstating the understatement. I don't know. I agree with what Josh said about how they oversimplify it and just...
My question is, which bridge am I driving on that's deadly? Because I don't need to be driving on it anymore. I live in Houston, and there's a lot of bridges.
We already have Arnold Schwarzenegger to warn us about things like that. We don't need the President of the United States talking to us about bridge construction.
But I agree with Matt in the instance of, I actually sat there, because you can get a transcript of the State of the Union. Reading a 14-page State of the Union speech is painful. But breaking it down into what Jon Stewart them say, hey, it's pretty easy and it's fun to listen to. Because apparently I giggle like a girl when I listen to comedy. So.
And Miley Cyrus is telling us that we need to head on out.
All right, we're going to go hop into a break and take an update on sororities around campus. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
This is the Go Tech, Go Greek Update, a program designed to discuss all things happening in the Greek community right here at Texas Tech. The Greek Update is a production of the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University. Welcome to the Go Tech, Go Greek Update. I'm your host, Lauren Locke. All right, listeners, today we are talking about Panhellenic. To non-Greeks and even some Greeks alike, many don't know what the National Panhellenic Council is and what they do. According to the Texas Tech MPC, it is the national coordinating body of 26 member sororities, and our campus houses 11 of those NPC groups. Now, the sole purpose for the MPC is to govern these sororities, put on formal recruitment, and serves as the backbone for all of these sororities. The founding values of the National Panhellenic Council are scholarship, leadership, sisterhood, and philanthropy. Joining a sorority is so much more than paying monthly dues to attend social events. It's a plug-in for women to maintain high academic excellence while learning the important values of leadership and philanthropy through service on campus and within the community. This fall, the Texas Tech MPC put on its first philanthropic project through the Circle of Sisterhood, and it has also participated in the Habitat for Humanity every other year, building a home for a family in need. The benefits of being in a sorority are infinite,
And although there are 11 different sororities, they all have a common goal in mind of becoming better and stronger women during their time as an active member in college. You can find out more information about the Greek community and other information in the Center for Campus Life on the second floor of the Student Union Building, as well as online at greek.ttu.edu. For the Go Tech, Go Greek update, I'm Lauren Locke. Join us next time to find out more about Greek life on Texas Tech's campus. The Go Tech, Go Greek update is produced at KTXT-FM in the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University.
Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech on KTXT The Raider 88.1. Big thanks to Dr. Dennis Patterson for joining us earlier in the show. If you missed that interview, you can catch it on KTXT or The Raider 88.1. The Raider881.com. We really need to work on...
We got 2 hours of sleep last night, so we were up here until 4 in the morning.
Putting this show together for you. Exactly.
And by when they say we, they mean Julie, Josh, and Kira. And Kira is still sleeping on accident.
No, I think that she gets a day off.
She gets a day off?
Doing news.
You can also connect with us on Twitter at TheRaider881, hashtag TheRaider. Also, this entire episode will be posted later on TheRaider881.com if you missed any of our talk about the State of the Union, interviews, what people wanted to ask the president, which was always entertaining, okay. A little Stephen Colbert.
I didn't get to say what I would ask the president, and that is, why did you get a dog right when you got into office? And he's fluffy, and he's cute.
Because they have a huge yard.
It's a tradition. It's a tradition to get a dog.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Every president has gotten a dog once they...
That dog is... Yeah, who cleans up after the dog? He said that his kids clean up after the dog, right?
I don't believe that.
No.
I don't believe it either. I bet they're princesses.
What? I bet there's an official... Like
dog poop picker upper,
like with an official title.
Which intern gets that title?
I know. Come intern at the White House, and you can pick up the dog's poop.
I'm pretty sure that's probably not like it's like intern at the White House position available.
I was gonna ask y'all how your Valentine's days were, but then I remember that I spent it with y'all. So that shoots that topic down. We went to Chili's. We ate some chips.
Really awesome. Exciting. We talked about work for about 2 hours.
Cried into our salsa.
Then we went to Spoonful and talked some more about work.
And I went home and drank half a bottle of wine.
Jolie Fisher.
Well, moving right along.
Well, we really want to thank y'all for hanging in with us today and listening to our idea of the State of the Union. We'll be back next Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock.
You mean this Wednesday morning?
This one. It's next. It's coming up.
Julie, it's time for bed.
Thanks for listening.
One hour of news and analysis of the big global stories of the day.
Our top story takes us to Iran.
We go first to the U.S. state of Colorado in the first...
This is News Hour with Owen Bennett-Jones, and coming up in...
News Hour's Lise Doucette sent this report from the...
We'll be finding out what this means for people in the Arab world's most populous...
1 hour of your day, and one of the most informative. News Hour, daily from the BBC.
The BBC World Service, weekday mornings from 5 to 9, here on The Raider 88.1. I wanna see you
out that door, baby, bye, bye, bye. Tune in for Flashback Fridays here on The Raider 88.1. All the things that I used to say,
all the words that got in the way. Handpicked songs from the 90s and early 2000s.
Playing our generation's version of the oldies but goodies every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. on the Raider 88.1 KTXT FM Lubbock.
First annual Texas Tech Appathon is coming up February 22nd and 23rd, hosted by the College of Media and Communication and the Whitaker College of Engineering. The first annual Texas Tech Appathon will challenge students to create the perfect app for the popular on-campus game, Humans vs. Zombies. Visit ttuappathon.com to register now.
With
With studios located in the Media and Communication Building on the Texas Tech University campus, this is the Raider 88.1 KTXT FM Lubbock. For questions and comments, email raider881@gmail.com. That is RAIDER881@gmail.com.